I'm Allison Kulo.
And I'm Doug Wells. Welcome to Mound Money on KPCW.
In How to Be an Ally, Melinda Epler offers readers a highly practical playbook on how we can all work together to create much-needed change in the workplace, resulting in a workplace where all employees feel valued, empowered, and are able to thrive. Drawing on original global study and over 25 years of experience developing business innovations and inclusion strategies for startups, Fortune 500 companies, and global NGOs, Melinda outlines 7 steps for taking action as an ally to correct this imbalance and create a stronger, better workplace as a result. As CEO of Change Catalyst, Melinda currently works with the tech industry to solve diversity and inclusion together. Previously, Melinda was a marketing and culture executive and award-winning documentary filmmaker. Her film and television work includes projects that exposed the AIDS crisis in South Africa, explored women's rights in Turkey, and prepared communities for the effects of climate change. She has worked on several television shows, including NBC's The West Wing. Melinda, thank you for joining us this morning on Mountain Money.
Hi, thank you for having me. Great to be here.
Well, we're happy to have this time to chat with you. What motivated you to write the book, and how long did it take to write it?
Oh, I've been working on diversity, equity, and inclusion for several years now, and I've come to realize that it's really going to take all of us working together to fundamentally create the change that we want to see in the world. And so I've seen so many people really wanting to create change and not knowing how. And so I created a playbook of really actionable things that you can do with some learning and frameworks and kind of data and stories along the way so that you could really create change in your life and the lives of other people around you. And in terms of how long it took, well, I mean, it took kind of a lifetime of accumulating the knowledge for it, and then about 2.5 years of writing it. I will say that writing the book in the pandemic was had its own unique challenges, but here I am. It's been released.
A little more quiet writing time than what maybe you had hoped for, as we all have. I picked up the habit of writing over the pandemic. But let me set the stage a little bit. I'm in my mid-50s, and it seemed to me when I entered adulthood that the changes that had taken place during my mother's professional career were incredible. The opportunities my older sister had were very different than the opportunities my mother had. Mm-hmm. But that was, you know, I was a young adult 30 years ago. What's happened in the last 30 years? And let me share. I ask the question because it seems to me not much has happened, that for whatever reason our progress has slowed. Are my observations misguided?
Yeah, it's interesting when, you know, I think about my mother, and she was a teacher and hid her pregnancy with me as long as she could, because she knew that she wasn't going to be able to keep her job when they found out. And it turns out she was fired for being pregnant. So I hear you. Yeah, things have changed since then. It's illegal now to be fired for being pregnant. But you're right that it's progress does seem kind of slow. It is changing, but it is slow. I started working on diversity, equity, and inclusion about 8 years ago, and my partner and I, Wayne Sutton, and I decided we really wanted to work on the tech industry and really create change in the tech industry, fundamentally shift it, and through a series of conferences and roundtables and internal conversations with D&I folks and CEOs and also the White House at the time, the Obama White House and more. And we thought at that time that we would have changed it by now. We would have kind of worked ourselves out of a job. And it turns out it's much more difficult to create change because it's a systemic issue. And it's each of us working to create change and really learning where we might be unintentionally creating harm for each other. And then it's also the individual behavior change, and it's also the organizational change. And when companies have been going so long in one direction, it's difficult to create that change internally, and it takes time. And then the third is the kind of ecosystem level of change. The industries take a while to change as well, because each of us has to advocate for that change in order for it to happen. And then, you know, it's a slow process. And in tech, for instance, you know, we have issues with biases and systemic issues around education that feeds into the tech industry. And so we have to kind of work on all of those things together. So yes, it takes time and it is slow. But I do see it changing. It's slow. Yeah.
So as you've then looked at the problem, your approach is that, you know, people need to become allies. So typically when, you know, I think of workplace change, it's top down. And when we talk about culture, you know, where does it come from? And, you know, talk to me about how an ally can help kind of make that change.
Yeah, I would say it is top down and bottom up and in the middle too. I mean, it really takes all of us. It takes leadership really stepping up to advocate for diversity, equity, and inclusion and really do their own learning to make sure that you're not unintentionally harming people through little biases, little things that we say that might be harmful and might make people feel excluded, disrespected, or undervalued, in some way belittled. And then working to, you know, learn that and make sure we're doing no harm, and then advocating for people as leaders, really advocating for, you know, when you see that someone is not getting the opportunities that they deserve, is advocate for them and use your influence and your power to open your networks, to open your power to people who deserve that. And then it's also, as a leader at a leadership level, it's really advocating for change and creating or changing systems and processes so that they really benefit everyone. And so at the leadership level is that, and then managers though also have a huge role to play in this, and really developing more inclusive teams, really understanding, you know, their own internal work that they need to do, and then creating a more inclusive team environment so everyone can really thrive and belong in that team. And as a result, of course, there's a lot of benefits to that in terms of a happier team, a healthier team. It helps with retention and productivity and innovation and ultimately profitability. And then each of us have a role as well to play. And we can all advocate for change in our companies and in society as well.
Yeah, I think there's many people, and it's really the premise of your book, right? That share this common goal. The question is, mm-hmm. how do they do it? You know, how do they make it better? And your book outlines 7 steps to take action as an ally. Give us an overview of those steps, please.
Yeah. So the first step is to learn, to unlearn, to relearn. You know, we have been taught a certain history in our lives, and it has often left a lot of people's perspectives and experiences out. And so unlearning biases that we might have learned from history and relearning them from new perspectives and really the second is to do no harm, to understand and correct our biases. And, you know, we learn biases from our families, from our teachers, from society. There's biases in our media. So it's really understanding and correcting those. And then the next step in doing no harm is to recognize and overcome microaggressions. Microaggressions are little everyday things that we might say or do that can make people feel belittled or disrespected or undervalued or it's harmed in some kind of way. And we all unintentionally harm people. So it's really recognizing these and then overcoming them. And then the fourth is to advocate for people. So step up and advocate for people in small everyday ways that can make a difference. Be their champion, mentor people, sponsor people, use your influence to open doors for them. And then the fifth one is to stand up for what's right. Intervene when you see harm being done, when you see microaggressions. intervene and support people who have been harmed as well. And then 6 is lead the change. So when you're ready, really take action to lead the change in your work, on your teams, and in your workplace. And 7, the last one, is to transform your organization, your industry, and society. We can all work to address biases and inequities across our companies and across the broader world as we're working and living through life.
Can you share with us a story that kind of takes us through that progression?
You know, I think it's not one story, but it's kind of a journey that we go through life. I will say that when I was growing up, I grew up in Oakland and then in South Seattle, both which are very diverse neighborhoods. And I had a diverse group of friends as I was growing up. And I grew up thinking that that's the way the world was. And, you know, really valuing differences, valuing unique perspectives. And I also didn't realize racism existed. And it wasn't until I got to University of Washington, my first year in college, and I was walking across the campus and came across a group of Black students who were talking about their own experiences with everyday racism, little things that they were experiencing every day that were keeping them down and keeping barriers that they were confronted by. And at first I was like, you know, they're making stuff up, or they're just making mountains out of molehills. And then I sat and listened for a while and I realized, oh, I have been wrong. I have been deeply wrong. And it took me a moment to really listen to them and listen to all the experiences they had. And then I realized I really wanted to make a difference and make sure that that didn't happen for folks. So my own personal journey started there, really, is, you know, learning and unlearning and relearning what I knew, and then making sure that I personally did no harm, correcting my own biases. And I will say that, as I said, it's a journey. It's a lifelong journey. And I learned there about race and ethnicity and continued to evolve my learning over time about Latinx folks and their unique experiences, Indigenous folks and their unique experiences, LGBTQIA plus folks and their unique experiences, and later, learn more about people with disabilities and how I could better support them and make sure that my language was not creating harm, make sure that I am actively advocating for people and working to create that systemic change as well.
Well, that's a powerful story. Thanks for sharing it. It's amazing that, you know, you walked across campus one direction. Had you gone a different direction, the arc of your life might have been different. I'll argue that this issue is in a better place because you took the path that you did, and you've dedicated your time to this field. Share with our audience, you know, when you write a book, you've oftentimes, and Allison and I and our other co-host Roger interview a lot of authors, and there's usually two or three insights that they're most proud of in the book, right? And then you fill it out with stories. But what are the two or three insights that were most important for you to share in your book? And maybe one that would be surprising for our audience.
Oh, interesting. I think one of them is really investigating that language and actions that are kind of in our everyday vernacular, in our everyday, you know, things that we, you know, just kind of been left in our how we say things and do things that are unintentionally creating harm, and really going deep into what those are, writing them down, and looking across to multiple identities. There's so many little ableist things where we're really unintentionally belittling people with disabilities, for example, in our language, for instance, you know, even just saying turn a blind eye to, turn a deaf ear to, or There's so many. And so I'm proud of kind of building a book that helps us all be allies for each person who has an identity that is often underrepresented. And there really isn't a book out there that I know of that that really looks across multiple identities. There are books that look at specifically at gender, especially women. There are books that look, great books that look at race. And my book really goes into race, gender, ethnicity, religion, disability, LGBTQIA+, and more, many of the intersectional identities as well that uniquely Black women face or Black women with disabilities face. So that is one. And I think the second is writing about the historical harm that has happened and how it kind of carries through our language and our systems in unique ways that we don't usually see or notice that can really cause barriers to access and opportunity,
Melinda,
for people.
Let me have you dig deeper on that just a little bit. And, yeah. Oftentimes you don't know your own culture until you've experienced other cultures. And because mm-hmm. of the pandemic, I've spent some time working remotely outside of my office, and I've been to South America, I've been to Colombia, I've spent some time in Mexico. And one of my takeaways is the Latino American culture is much more tuned in to the issues of the indigenous folks and kind of how history has created obstacles that are still in place today. And there's a recognition and an embracement of that that exists in Latin America that doesn't exist in our country. Why do you think we have failed to embrace our history to this point?
At the basic level, I would say that it's easier not to, by ignoring it it's uncomfortable and it can make us feel guilty or ashamed that we have this dark history where we've really harmed people and oppressed people and enslaved people. That is a hard thing to think about, to talk about. And
that's a point of parity, though, in these other countries. They also enslaved people. And it's a much, here's what I'll share. I think it's much healthier that these countries that I've been fortunate enough to be able to visit and spend time to, I think their society is healthier for having crossed that uncomfortable chasm.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. And I also think that each country still has more to do there in terms of repairing what has happened. I mean, there's definitely in Latin America, there's still climate injustice and inequity and resource inequity as well, that people, indigenous people, are still fighting for their rights to their own land, and they're still the hardest hit in the pandemic because of a lack of healthcare, access to healthcare, and access to basic needs that as a result of being kind of marginalized and throughout history, and so there is still more in each country. I think, Australia also is kind of coming to terms with how they have harmed the indigenous population and the Aboriginal population there as well. And they're still, and I would say that they're more active in speaking about it, and there's still a lot more action that needs to happen.
So knowing that, again, there's so much that contributes to the biases that people have, whether it be history or family or whatever they may be, knowing that it's a worldwide problem, your book focuses on the workplace. How can you talk about some of the results or where being an ally can take us in the future?
Sure. Yeah. When we have more diverse and inclusive teams, we have better innovation, and we are building products and services that benefit more people in the world. And ultimately, you know, when you do that, you also become more profitable, and it affects your revenue too. Being a good ally also makes you a better leader when you're supporting your team, so they feel psychologically safe and engaged and really able to thrive at your company. It helps with retention, with productivity, with innovation again, and happiness, profitability. And I believe, honestly, that one of the reasons that I am so passionate about this is that we have so many large global issues, and it's going to take all of us to solve them. And all of us uniquely understanding each of our different perspectives, our experiences, and how to solve each of those issues, our unique experiences with climate change, for example, our unique experiences with pandemics, and really working together to solve them. And so we need diverse, equitable, inclusive teams working together on creating that innovation.
The need has never been higher, nor the payoff, mm-hmm. right? The payoff is enormous as well, if we can mm-hmm. figure this out. We've got time for one last question, and I think the biggest leverage of conversations like this is maybe we inspire somebody that's at an organization that's resistant to change. What advice do you have for somebody in an organization like that to help their company change?
For somebody who is resisting it?
No, somebody in the organization that wants to see change made, wants to be a better ally, that wants to see more inclusivity, but unfortunately works at a company that is resistant of that. What can one person do?
Yeah, there are a few things. One is that you know you're not alone. There are other people that also believe in wanting to create change and are wanting to create change. And so find those other people, because it's easier to advocate when you are in a group and it's not just you. There's generally at least one person at the leadership level that really either believes in this work or is open to it. And you really need to find, in any kind of behavior change, you need to find an opening. You know, what is it that motivates that person? Is it the next generation? Is it their kids, their family, their grandkids? Is it that wanting to be a good leader? Is it wanting to build a more profitable product or service? Is it you know, being a better colleague? All of those things are, you know, we've done a lot of research on what motivates people, and all of those things are different aspects of what motivates people. So find what that is and really speak to that, and know that change takes time. Behavior change is a series of steps, right? It's not you can't create change by telling somebody to change. You have to find that motivation and kind of meet them where they are, move them along the path toward behavior change over time. And so, you know, meet them where they are, give them the initial information, allow them to distill it themselves, and then kind of keep going as they're ready for more. Keep pushing. And a lot of most people learn about the need for diversity and inclusion, the need for allyship, through stories. So tell your own story if you can. You know, how has being excluded impacted you in the workplace, in your life? Tell stories of specific stories of how that person might have unintentionally harmed you, if you can, if you're at that point and able to do so in a safe way. And you know, continue to tell stories. That is really that in one-on-one interaction is really often where okay. the change starts.
Well, that's a great note for us to end on. Our guest this morning has been Melinda Epler. She's the author of the book, How to Be an Ally, Actions You Can Take for a Stronger, Happier Workplace.
You've been listening to KPCW's Mountain Money. If you enjoy the show, make sure to leave a review no matter where you listen.